They just celebrated the annual Dillinger Days at the Hotel Congress here in Tucson, commemorating the capture of the bank robber John Dillinger in January of 1934. Dillinger and his gang came here to get away from an intense manhunt in the Midwest after an Indiana bank robbery left a police officer dead. As luck would have it, a fire broke out in the Hotel Congress one morning, and the gang had to evacuate along with the rest of the guests. Concerned about their luggage, which contained a lot of guns and ammo, they persuaded some firemen to retrieve their bags for them. One of the firemen later recognized the gang members from a photo in a detective magazine, and they were all rounded up by the Tucson police, with Dillinger captured at a rented house on North 2nd Avenue. The local glamour surrounding all this was a bit tarnished by the fact that Dillinger ended up escaping from an Indiana jail just a month later. 5 months after that, he was gunned down by the FBI outside of a Chicago movie theater. This got me to thinking about the portrayal of Dillinger in the movies and what it says about different eras in filmmaking, and in general about our depiction of criminals through the years. There have been three major films about Dillinger. The first was made in 1945, called Dillinger, naturally, and starring quintessential tough guy Lawrence Tierney.
Remember Scarface? Remember Little Caesar? The enormity of their crimes was exceeded in real life by the man you're now looking at, John Dillinger. His smile hid, violent passions, terrifying hatreds, and sudden death.
It was produced at Monogram, one of the so-called Poverty Row studios that cranked out movies dirt cheap. It shows, too. All the rooms have the same nondescript look, and the film uses backdrops frequently in lieu of sets. Directed by the workmanlike Max Nosick, it fits right in with the bleak post-war crime films that later earned the label film noir. Dillinger moves its grim story along at a crisp pace. It's amusing to see how, other than a few details, such as the stop in Tucson and Dillinger getting shot outside a theater, the script doesn't bother to follow the real story at all, but makes everything up. The people in Dillinger's gang, his girlfriend, almost every detail of the story is pure fiction. In Tucson, for instance, which is signaled by a banner over a road saying, "Tucson, Sunshine Capital of the West," the film has Dillinger being set up by his partner to get captured at a dentist's office after being immobilized by laughing gas. Tierney plays the title role as pure sociopath. There are no likable people here. Nobody really cares for or trusts anybody else in this movie. In a way, it's typical of the crime-doesn't-pay moralism of the old-fashioned crime picture, but it also has something of the hopelessness and brutal cynicism of film noir. The camera turns away at the climax during violence scenes, standard practice in those days, but done rather well here. It actually makes the violence much more shocking. In 1973, John Milius made another version, once again called Dillinger, and starring the veteran character actor Warren Oates in the title role, portraying Dillinger as a sort of grown-up child playing at being a criminal. This script sticks more closely to history, with Michelle Phillips on hand as Dillinger's girlfriend Billy, and, surprise, Richard Dreyfuss, before he became a star, showing up as Babyface Nelson.
All right, everybody, hold it right where you are. This is a robbery. Don't nobody get nervous. You ain't got nothing to fear. You're being robbed by the John Dillinger gang. That's the best there is.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
This time, the Tucson arrest happens, inexplicably, at a sort of outdoor hootenanny. The picture also gets the chronology of who gets killed when all mixed up in order to accentuate the drama. Milius uses an offbeat, laconic style to depict the Depression as a time of easy morals and casual cruelty. It's obviously inspired by Bonnie and Clyde, and it really cranks up the violence. The director seems to be enjoying his newfound freedom to show as much blood as possible.
It was a war, and like in any war, there were legends, glorifying heroes and villains alike. But somehow the most glorified of all was the nation's deadliest public enemy, Warren Oates, as the man whose treacherous cunning baffled every law officer in the Midwest.
Although Warren Oates' raw, understated style is a pleasure, we never really get to know Dillinger. The film is narrated by Ben Johnson as the FBI agent Melvin Purvis, who brings Dillinger down, and this creates a lopsided dramatic effect. The most accurate version, historically, was made in 2009, Public Enemies, directed by Michael Mann, and starring Johnny Depp, who plays Dillinger as a smart man, a few words, who gets off on being daring and reckless.
What is it exactly you do for a living?
John Dillinger robbed banks.
Damn That's a serious thing to say to a girl you just met.
What else you need to know?
The director's use of digital video instead of regular film gives the picture a kind of rough immediacy, as if somebody had traveled back in time with a camcorder and just happened to be in the right places. Dillinger is seen as the last example of individual rebellion before crime became organized crime. Depp gets the walk and the expressions right, although there's not much of a sense of a real person behind all the mannerisms. Christian Bale has less to do as the straight-arrow FBI man Purvis. Despite a basic callousness, Dillinger is given some fatal qualities of loyalty and passion, particularly in his attachment to Billy, played here by Marion Cotillard. The Tucson arrest follows the actual history for a change, but once again the chronology is jumbled near the end of the film in order to allow a big, exciting shootout.
Hell, the whole country thinks you're a damn hero.
Robbing banks is getting tougher.
We're having too good a time today. We ain't thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you ought to.
From the early days of film, we've seen a gradual progression in the romantic depiction of outlaws. In the case of Dillinger, we started in the 1940s with a sneering brute who turns into a sort of grandiose dreamer in the 70s, and then in the 2000s ends up a devil-may-care antihero. In each era, we get the criminal that matches our American worldview. I find it interesting that nobody has fully succeeded in fashioning a believable character around Dillinger. Someone once remarked that evil is always fascinating in fiction and goodness boring, while the opposite is true in real life. The movies project a lot of exciting themes onto men like Dillinger, when in reality they were probably not much more than common thugs. For Arizona Spotlight, this is Chris DeShiel.